Good afternoon, soccer aficionados, and welcome to the Champions League, the European Soccer Show with the European Soccer Guy. I'm your host, DJ Cruyff, and you're listening to the best radio from San Fran, Japan, Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu or 102.3 FM. Coming at you even during this quarantine days. This is the 8th episode of a 9 shows marathon that will hang around with you during this magic tournament called Champions League, which is not being played, of course, as of yet. We're still stuck in this coronavirus break, which is appropriate, I guess, because of, you know, saving lives. It's most important than sports, so happy for the decisions that most of the soccer entities around the world are taking. Keeping everybody safe is much better than sports, but we miss sports a lot. For example, I read that in Turkmenistan, which is the middle of nowhere country under Russia, they have Southeast India. In Turkmenistan, they are reviving the competition, their championship. And I don't know. I don't want to watch Turkmenistani soccer. So this is it for the news about coronavirus and soccer. They are still playing in Belarus. In Nicaragua, I think they're still playing as well. But not great level for sure. Today, what are we going to do? We're going to do a lot of funny stuff. We will read a lot of articles, the great articles I read on the internet that can provide us a nice point of view, some nice topic to discuss. There is also, and we will get right into it, we will talk about the first leg of the 2010 UEFA Champions League semi-final clash between Internazionale Milan and FC Barcelona, one of the great, great matches in this millennium. So it was the Inter team coached by Jose Mourinho and the Barcelona team coached, of course, by Pep Guardiola. It was a really thing of beauty. We'll go ahead with the lineups for this game. It was played on the 20th of April 2010, it was a Tuesday at night in beautiful San Siro Stadium. San Siro, aka La Scala del Calcio, which means the theater for soccer. I've been there a lot of times, probably more than 50 times. Was a season ticket holder for AC Milan, the other team that plays in the San Siro Stadium. San Siro is actually the neighborhood in Milan that gives the stadium the name, but the stadium is actually entitled to former Inter and Milan striker back in the 40s and the 50s, Giuseppe Meazza. So let's get back to this game, this Inter-Barcelona game. What a game it was. These two teams arrived here after a long, perilous path through the Champions League previous stages, and now they meet once again in the semi-final. Again, Mourinho against Guardiola, one of the greatest rivalries we've had in this century. Inter, the host, were playing with a compact 2-4-3-1 formation, as Jose Mourinho has accustomed us to see. The goalkeeper, number 12, Julio Cesar, one of the very best back then, the Brazilian. The captain on the left flank, Javier Zanetti, the tractor, number 4, iconic player for Inter, played at Inter for more than 22 years. Then the two center backs were they were really tough to face. The wall, Walter Samuel from Argentina and Lucio, the Brazilian. He was very tall and he was crazy. He was kind of an offensive center back because he used to rush forward a lot, and then the right back. He has been the best right back in the world for many, many years. He was so good that in the Brazilian national team, Dani Alves had to move position because he was the best right back between the two of them, and the best in the world, of course. Douglas Cicenado Maicon, or also known as just Maicon. The midfield for Inter, such a holding, strong, physical midfield composed by Argentinian Cambiasso, the bold one, number 19, and Thiago Motta. Thiago Motta is Italian-Brazilian midfielder, really underrated. His career is truly underrated and underappreciated. He was really a technical, beautiful to watch midfielder for most of his career. The three guys in support of El Príncipe, the Prince, Diego Alberto Milito, the great striker for Inter, where on the left flank, the Macedonian Goran Pandev, number 27, one of the underground legend for that team, and then the offensive midfielder, the regista really of that team, who scored and assisted for that game, Wesley Sneijder, who will end up that season, that 2010 season, second in the Ballon d'Or race after going really, really close to bring the Netherlands to the World Cup trophy as well. Of course, they lost against Spain and Iniesta, who was not part of this game, but we will discuss Barcelona formation later. Samuel Eto'o was, of course, the 11th man for Internazionale. Samuel Eto'o from Cameroon, number 9. He was relegated to the right flank because of Milito, but really he was another great striker who was willing to sacrifice himself, sacrifice his goal-scoring ability to help his team. Now let's watch Barcelona's formation again. Probably the best formation they could possibly put out there, with the loss of none other than Andres Iniesta. He was not there, but Victor Valdez, the keeper, was number one between the posts, always there. The two fullbacks were, of course, there. Dani Alves on the right and Maxwell to the left. Maxwell, of course, was part of Inter Milan just the previous season. Two center backs were Pujol and Piqué, of course, the great couple of them. They have played probably, I don't know, 500 games together. Really a chemistry between the two of them, of course, both with Barcelona and the Spanish national team. In the midfield, instead of Iniesta, Keita took his place, the Malian midfielder Seydou Keita, then will go on to play for Rome in Italy. The defensive midfielder was number 16, another great legend for Barcelona, Sergi Busquets, who debuted for Barcelona at 18 years old and still plays now. Number 6 on the incursore or mezzala role to the right flank, Xavi Hernandez. Xavi was really one of the greatest players this century has ever seen. Such a skilled midfielder. Then up front, Ibrahimovic was there. He made his huge return to Milan, where he played for Internazionale and then will go on to play for AC Milan too. So Ibra was up there. Pedrito Rodriguez on the left flank and on the right, none other than the GOAT itself, Lionel Messi. But this game actually was previewed by a crazy event, which is really, I don't even know where to begin to explain this, because Barcelona had to travel to Milan, Italy, on a bus, which is not ideal. It took probably 14-15 hours to get there. Because a volcano in Iceland, can you believe that? Was erupting all over Europe. So there was a lot of, you know, dust and the skies were not safe. So they had to travel by bus. It's like traveling for the San Francisco Warriors. It's like for the Golden State Warriors to travel all the way up to the Portland Trail Blazers to play in Portland, Oregon. Probably even more than that. It's like for the Lakers or the Clippers in LA to go up there in Oregon. It's hysterical. So huge disadvantage for Barcelona, but Inter had nothing to do with it, of course. The two teams, as I told you, were involved in a massive summer transfer. Zlatan Ibrahimovic went from Inter Milan to Barcelona in exchange for world-class Cameroonian striker Samuel Eto'o. I'm sorry, guys. The Brazilian left-back, very solid left-back, Maxwell, and around $80 million. So not only Eto'o, not only Maxwell, but $80 million. The teams were coached by Guardiola and Mourinho, as I told you. It was the start, it was the continuation of a fierce rivalry. Back then, Mourinho was nicknamed the Special One after he won the Champions League with Porto in 2004 and a couple of Premier Leagues with Chelsea. He was one of the very best coaches in the world, able to prepare his tactics based on his opponent's weaknesses. Inter Milan offense was very basic and direct, but most of all, it was effective. Ibrahimovic was eaten alive by the guarding of Inter Milan centre-backs Lucio and Samuel. Another Argentinian was the lucky charm for Inter up front that season because he was really one of the best strikers in the world. El Principe Milito had an amazing, amazing season. He probably in couple of seasons with Mourinho, he scored 30 goals per season, something along those lines, where he found the net basically in every game. But the brain of that Inter Milan was the Dutch offensive regista, Wesley Sneijder, for sure one of the very best players in the world that season. He was really playing his best game of the career, to be honest with you. I was watching one of his games just yesterday. It was quarterfinal of the Champions League 2013. He was playing for Galatasaray alongside Didier Drogba and Emmanuel Eboué, and Sneijder, he was not in his prime anymore. It's just 3 years later, this game, but he was not in his physical prime anymore. Not his peak, for sure. So Sneijder picked at the very right time for Inter to take advantage of his great qualities as a passer and as a finisher behind the goal, in front of the goal, of course. The Brazilian right back, Maicon, was arguably the best player on the field that night. He was defending, attacking spaces, overlapping, and helping the offensive phase. He destroyed Maxwell on the left flank of FC Barcelona and also scored an important goal. The other two goals were scored, of course, by Sneijder and Milito themselves, while Pedrito Rodriguez actually opened the game with a goal. So it was 0-1 for Barcelona in the beginning, but then, you know, this is what really differentiates Mourinho's team from really anybody else. The strong mentality. They never quit. They were never out of games. And that's what made it possible for them to win against a Barcelona team that really was thought invincible. Everybody was like, okay, Inter has no chance. I mean, they have a puncher stance, but that's basically it. Inter said, we got this. And they managed win against Barcelona 3-1 in the first leg at San Siro, the Giuseppe Meazza Stadium. Then they managed somehow, they lost only 1-0 in Camp Nou in Barcelona, so they made it through the final, in which, of course, they won against Bayern Munich in Madrid. Great win, and guess who scored? Diego El Principe Milito again. Two goals to knock off Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich that had up front Ivica Olic, Thomas Müller, Mario Gomez, and Miroslav Klose. I mean, Miroslav Klose, he just entered the game in the 63rd minute, right? But Miroslav Klose is the World Cup holder, record holder for goals in his career in the World Cup. He had like 16 goals in the World Cup, more than Ronaldo, more than Pelé, more than Maradona, more than Messi, more than anybody else. That's how good Miroslav Klose is, and Inter Milan kept them scoreless. After the break, dear listeners, right here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu, after the break, we will discuss a lot of more soccer.
DU Did You Know is brought to you by Penguin Radio. DU Did You Know that the Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference is coming up in April?
What's that?
The Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference is an opportunity for Dominican students to practice their presentation skills by showcasing their senior capstone research projects to a live audience.
Is there any way this can help me after college?
Let's ask Professor Bill Phillips, one of the founders of the conference.
Presenting yourself in this manner is very good experience, because when you go out on the job market, you have to present yourself and you have to have confidence when you do it. This is just one more way of getting that confidence.
Along with Professor Bill Phillips, Michael Pujols is one of the other founding members of the Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference. Can you tell us about Dominican Scholar?
The role of Dominican Scholar is we're taking the conference schedule, we're putting online in Dominican Scholar, and then we're also, if students want to, and of course, you know, with their faculty advisor permission, we can also upload the posters, we can upload their presentations or slide sets, you know, what have you. So Dominican Scholar plays the electronic role as far as getting the conference out there and making it available to the public.
Is there anything you would like to add, Professor Phillips?
It's a celebration of the capstone project that all students are working on. And it's a privilege to present your research and to have other people see what you're doing, because it's a culmination of your academic experience here at Dominican. And you should be able to be on a platform where you could just show off the stuff that you've done.
How can I find out more information?
The link for Dominican Scholar is scholar.dominican.edu.
Find out more information at scholar.dominican.edu.
See you there! DU Did You Know, brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio.
Welcome back to the Champions League, the only show that brings you inside the fabulous world of soccer, even if it's all stopped by a pandemic. I'm your host, DJ Cruyff, and you're listening to the best radio from San Fran to Japan, Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu or 102.3 FM. We are going to dive deep right now in this Instagram chat between Daniele Adani, who is a former Italian footballer and a former player, yeah, of course, now a journalist for Sky Sport Italy, where I'm from, where I'm living right now. I was in beautiful San Rafael for a couple of months through an exchange program, but now I'm back here. Because of the pandemic, of course, and still providing you with great content about soccer. I told you, Daniele Adani was interviewing on his Instagram stories Matias El Pelado Almeida. Almeida and Adani were are friends, still friends, since their Inter Milan days in the early 2000s. Almeida is currently the San Jose Earthquakes coach. He is the head coach for that MLS team, and he is nicknamed El Pelado, not because he is bald, he has beautiful long hair and mustache, but because he had very short hair when he was a toddler. So then his hair grew, I suppose. The interview begins with how they were pioneers in talking about systems and tactics and doing it on the mainstream media. Then they went on to talk about the great striker from Italy, Christian Bobo Vieri. Bobo Vieri, he was named, nicknamed the camel because he was so big and has really powerful left foot. Played for Inter Milan, for Lazio, for Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan, really a great legend from Italy. He gave his whole heart for the Italian national team. And finally, they discussed some MLS. Almeida said that back in the days, the MLS was a retirement league, you know, where players go at the final stage of their careers. Let's give some few names. David Beckham with LA Galaxy, he was a very tail end of his career. Or also Andrea Pirlo for New York FC, or Ricardo Kaká in Orlando. I mean, player getting old, but is still, you know, I still had a couple of seasons in them at the lower levels, and to get some money, why not? A hashtag fulfill their pockets, so they did that. But that was not a healthy system for the MLS, because retirement players are not, or almost retired players are not, what attracts, you know, youth and improves your system. So now the league, said Almeida and Adani, now the league has done a great job in developing young players, and the league has shown exponentially, has grown exponentially, said Almeida. Just a brief look, guys, inside El Pelado thoughts in the very end of this episode of the Champions League. We are discussing another topic right here. Let's completely change topic with a fitting article right now in Rory Smith piece from New York Times from December 2019. It's called Soccer is Politics, Whether It Likes It or Not. So, Rory Smith on the NYT mixes up soccer and politics. Let's see what he has to say to us and why it's important to us. I'm going to read you the first two paragraphs, but please go read the full version of it on the nytimes.com. Mesut Ozil is slowly disappearing from China. An online forum dedicated to him has closed. He has been scrubbed from the version of Pro Evolution Soccer, the video game, that is available on the country. Rory Smith on the New York Times continues, saying that Arsenal's last Premier League game at home against Manchester City was not broadcasted on Chinese television. It is not clear yet how long the blackout will last. No Mesut Ozil in China, guys. Can you believe this? Why? Let's see. Rory Smith continues on the NewYorkTimes.com. His offense was simple. He spoke. Last week, Ozil released simultaneous statements on his Twitter and Instagram feeds criticizing the Chinese government's mass detention of Uyghurs, allegedly Turkish Muslim minority in the Xinjiang province in the China's northwest. He called on Muslims across the world to speak against the policy. He said, "Muslims are silent," he wrote. Don't they know that consent for persecution is persecution itself?" A very stingy and provocative and important question raised by Rory Smith on the NewYorkTimes.com. It's a piece that deals with, you know, just the figure of Mesut Ozil, who, I don't want to say is, he was one of the very best players in the world. He is not, I don't know, he plays with no passion anymore, but he is still a very influent, you know, soccer player, and very good. Not that world class anymore, but he is right to speak out on these issues, and China just makes him disappear. Like, he has been scrapped from the Virgin of Pro Evolution Soccer, PES, what? They're not broadcasting his games anymore in television? I don't know, it's really strange, and not good for sure. But let's move on to probably happier and, I should say, funnier topics. Because since the MLS has stopped as well, and we cannot talk about played soccer because there isn't anyone, and there will be no playing soccer for a while. Here is another story I want you to know today, as they say in The Daily, the format by New York Times, for example. FC Internazionale Milano, or simply Inter Milan. So we were talking about them in the previous segment of the Champions League, and we were talking about the MLS in the previous segment, in the previous part of this segment with El Palado Almeida. Internazionale Milan, or simply Inter Milan, is one of the most decorated Italian teams and European clubs. They are very angry with Inter Miami for allegedly copying their name, the Floridian franchise founded not much time ago by David Beckham. Oh, here we are, David Beckham again. Twice in this podcast, that's really cool, has a longer name, Club Internacional de Football Miami. That's a really sounding name. It's the 25th MLS franchise. The majority owner is the tycoon from Bolivia, Marcelo Claure, and Beckham is there as a minority owner. Recently, the United States Patent and Trademark Office refused one of the two major arguments that Inter Miami brought up in defense of their naming rights. Because, you know, Inter Miami, Inter Milan. Inter Milan was founded probably more than 100 years before the Floridian franchise. So they were like, okay, just pay us for your naming rights. And Inter Miami, of course, was like, nah, we're not doing this, because we are actually called Club Internacional de Football Miami. One last thing before moving on. The Inter Miami logo is so glorious, guys. Two pink flamingos on a black background. This is a real shame that the team has lost two games out of two, and as a very expansion team basically is, will not be good. This is it for the second segment of this eighth show of the Champions League. When we come back, we will talk about some great soccer again.
If you're looking for a fun way to get away from the grind of homework and quizzes, then the California Film Institute has you covered. One of the largest nonprofit film organizations in the Bay Area, the CFI proudly owns and operates the Christopher B. Smith Rafael Film Center on 4th Street in downtown San Rafael. The Rafael Theater is open year-round and is home to the prestigious Mill Valley Film Festival and the Docklands Documentary Film Festival. The Rafael's catalog of films include award-winning independent dramas, shocking and revealing documentaries, the best in world cinema, rare retrospectives, along with opera and ballet performances presented live on screen. The Smith Rafael Film Center is located at 1118 4th Street in San Rafael between A and B Streets. The Smith Rafael Film Center is the perfect place to start a romantic evening or to decompress with a group of friends. To keep up with everything happening at the Rafael, please visit our website at rafaelfilm.org. Sign up for our weekly e-newsletter and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Welcome back to the Champions League, the only show that brings you inside the fourth death anniversary of Johan Cruyff, the former great Dutch player and coach that gives the name to myself, your host, DJ Cruyff, as you're listening to Penguin Radio, the Dominican.edu or 102.3 FM. Johan Cruyff gave the name to the DJ itself, and of course, he was a late great Dutch genius, and I like to take a moment to commemorate him because of the 24th of March, just not more than a month ago. It was the first anniversary of his death, and I read a great article on BarcaInnovationHub.com. It's a great site when you can read some really cool in-depth stuff, in which the article tries, the author tries to apply the principles of Johan Cruyff to data science. It's really an interesting topic. I mean, they take some genius from the past who completely revolutionized the game, and they try to apply some data science at it. Quote from the article, you can find it on BarcaInnovationHub.com. Football is a sport that you play with your brain. You have to be in the right place at the right moment. Not too early, not too late. This is how Johan Cruyff summarized the main goal for decision-making in football, stressing that being in the right place at the right time is the cornerstone for positional play. On this basis, Cruyff insisted that it is statistically proven that players actually have the ball for 3 minutes on average. So the most important thing is, what do you do during those 87 minutes when you do not have the ball? This is what determines whether you are a good player or not. With this unequivocal view, Johan expressed how individual talent must also help to create the best possible context around the ball through the movements of these players who are not in control of the ball. Later on, the article on BarcaInnovationHub.com explains how this team of researchers were able to build a mathematic model through machine learning algorithms. Wow, that sounds really geeky. It allowed them to determine the impact of the player's disposition in every second of the game. Really cool stuff. Go read that, where you will also be able to download the full paper. It's a paper, it's just not an article, really for experts and people who want to improve their knowledge about soccer. But let's go on, let's quickly change topic, because we have another great article on The Guardian this time. It's called How Bahia Became the Most Progressive Soccer Club in Brazil by Joshua Lowe on Guardian.com, and it explains how Bahia have cut prices, given fans a voice, tackled political issues, and dedicated themselves to affection, integration, and love, which are, you know, really good things. As the Bahia players, the article says, as the Bahia players walked on the pitch for their Serie A game against Ceará last month, there was something striking about their shirts. Their elegant blue, red and white stripes were covered by splotches of black around their neck, under the arms and on the hem. They had not accidentally spilled a pot of paint on the kit bag. Bahia were making a statement. For the last 52 days, hundreds of tons of thick crude oil had been washing up on the beaches in the northeast of Brazil. Nobody knew where the oil was coming from, and the government's response was woefully inadequate. Far right fucking... I shouldn't have said that. Whatever. I'm sorry for that. Jair Bolsonaro said that he did do nothing, of course, right? We saw, says Bahia President Guilherme Belintani, we saw the news being spread, but it was timid in relation to the scale of the disaster. So the club decided to speak up. Bahia's intervention on the subject came as no surprise to football fans in Brazil. Over the last 2 years, the club have developed a reputation as the most democratic and socially engaged club in the country, running campaigns on issues such as racism, LGBTQ rights, and demarcation of indigenous lands and treatment of female fans in football stadiums. This was the beginning of the article. Strongly recommended. Check it out. Check out all the features on The Guardian. Have great sports writers, great website. Let's go check it out. I also have for you, ladies and gentlemen, right here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu, another great piece written by Italian journalist Emanuele Mongiardo on L'Ultimo Uomo, a website I write for as well. It deals with the lack of skilled players in Italy, and if you don't have players able to dribble in one-on-one situations, you will suffer it. In the process of selecting players in Italy, technique and individual skill is not highly taken into consideration. Middle-class Serie A teams in particular welcome players with a high IQ level, a great tactical sense, great effort players without the ball, but who are not creative with it. Atalanta's man marking is triumphant in Italy because often their opponents do not have enough talent to escape their individual duels all over the field. Destabilizing Gasperini and Atalanta's system is easier in Europe soccer, since so many teams, not even big ones, as we saw in the group stage, as Dinamo Zagreb from Croatia or Shakhtar Donetsk from Ukraine, have those kinds of players. Few good dribblers exist in Serie A, but those are really good ones. Sassuolo's Jeremy Boga, Juve's Douglas Costa, Lecce's Filippo Falco. He is nicknamed the Zidane of Southern Italy. Fiorentina's old but gold Frank Ribery, Juve's Paulo Dybala, Atalanta Papu Gomez and Josip Iličić, and AC Milan's Rafael Leao are few examples. The one coach aware of all of this is, of course, Pep Guardiola. He is transforming two great dribblers who used to play on the flanks, such as Bernardo Silva and David Silva, as mezzali, which is an Italian term adopted all over the world to describe the two midfielders who play next to the defensive midfielder. In Manchester City's system, the mezzali have to find their spot behind the opponent's pressure lines, freeing themselves up from marking. Their great individual skills, ball protection, ability with the back to the goal and dribbling with a great first touch is crucial to their team success. In the last third of the midfield, Manchester City's ball possession near the opponent's penalty area is so good because of this. It's a great article by Emanuele Mongiardo again on L'Ultimo Uomo. Go read it. It's in Italian. You can translate it through Google or something. I guess it's really worth your trip on that website and your clicks. An article. Again, I love reading articles, guys, because it really takes us into the depth of soccer, and we were able to analyze a bunch of stuff today. We dove deep into what happened in Brazil with Bahia, or what's going on with the naming rights between Internazionale Milan and Inter Miami, or we were able to celebrate Johan Cruyff's death anniversary. We were able to see some El Pelado Almeida thoughts on the MLS, and also, of course, in the first segment of this very show, we were dealing with the first leg of the 2010 UCL semi-final clash between FC Inter and Barcelona. This is the very last thing we will deal with today. An article for you, my soccer geeks out there. It's again on BarçaInnovationHub.com and deals with the evolution of La Masia, the decorated, notorious youth sector of FC Barcelona. That youth sector, that youth system they have right there in Barcelona, it's where Lionel Messi, Carlos Pujol, Piqué, Victor Valdez, the whole crew came from. As you can read from the piece on BarçaInnovationHub.com, the new La Masia is very different from the old one. So what do we have here? Something is changing. After the move out from the center of the city 10 years ago, the traditional farmhouse has been replaced by a modern office block. And as Javier Fernandez, data scientist for FC Barcelona, showed me today, of course, the author of the article on BarçaHub.com, showed me around the corridors of the new center, it felt that I could be in the very high-tech headquarters of Google, or a world-renowned university department. It was easy to forget that at the very same time as this tour was taking place, only a few hundred meters away, Messi and company were training in preparation for the coming season. The article goes on talking about FC Barcelona and data, which is a pretty good combo to check out on BarçaInnovationHub.com. Great website. I'm on that a lot to learn more about data and soccer and how these things will mesh up in the future. Also, this time it's on La Masia. La Masia, I told you, it's a youth sector, and in Europe, in Barcelona especially, they are all about youth movement and how they can grow their next superstars. So data will have a huge impact on that as well. I'm thrilled to say that we have very last episode, guys, of the Champions League on Penguin Radio. Live next Monday, of course. I hope you will find this pretty interesting. In the next episode, I don't know what we will do, but we will do something as fun as we did today. Until then.
The best in the world is made by me.